Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Danster.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a return visit by sports bettor named Spanky. Spanky, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Since we're posting this show a few days after the Super Bowl, it would be normal to assume that we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. But that's not going to happen. Because Richard is off somewhere playing the secret game, we're taping this show the week before the Super Bowl. So basically, we have no idea of what actually is going to happen there. For those inquiring minds who want a clue about where Richard is going to be playing his secret game, I can divulge my insider knowledge to tell you that this time it will not be Iowa, Ireland, or Uruguay. With such a good clue, I'm sure you'll be able to figure it out in no time at all. So, Spanky, in the NFL championship game between the Saints and the Rams, an egregious fourth quarter non-call basically robbed the Saints and put the Rams into the Super Bowl. It didn't affect the line unless you were betting either team straight up. The sports world yelled and screamed at the unfairness of all this, especially if you were a Saints fan or a Saints bettor. Did this cause any ripple in your world at all?
No, it really didn't have any effect on us, Bob. We're really, once the NFL playoffs start and we kind of, you know, focus all of our attentions on the college basketball and NBA markets, so it didn't have any effect on me whatsoever.
If you had been betting that game, or say the same thing had happened in a mid-season game where you had some kind of bet on, and it went against you, how bad does you kick the dog, throw the cat out the window? What do you do when you have these bad beats, which happen in every game?
We don't really, you know, at least myself, I don't know about my other guys in my office, but I don't really watch games. You know, it might be surprising, but I probably haven't watched the full game of any sport in maybe a decade. Once the game kicks, unless we're doing something live, we're not really looking at it. My work is done. Everything, all of our positions are good. We're happy where we're at. And the game, you know, the players are going to play the game and that's it. If I can't control it, I'd probably, you know, rather spend time with my wife, my kids and do something else. The love of sport, being in this business for so long and having action essentially on every game, I fell out of love in essence with watching it. I'll still, you know, if I'm out with friends or something, maybe, but I don't really watch games anymore.
Yeah, I think any professional bettor of any type, you know, if you're a blackjack player in the beginning, you have some really high true count, you push your max bet out there and you get 11 against a 6 and you make a 20 and the dealer draws an 8 card 21. And in the beginning, that just feels devastating. But after you've played for a while, I mean, it's just another hand. And all you really care about is where am I at the end of the year, you know?
That's a great point. Yeah, you can't get caught up in the just the one incident and the one game. You're right. All that stuff is just going to, you know, you just look at the final score. And, you know, I heard there's people that are trying to maybe file a lawsuit against the referees and stuff. And, you know, it's a crazy world we live in. You know, it's just, I don't know. it's gambling at the end of the day.
All right. I'm curious as to how you got the name Spanky. On this show, we've had Dink. We've had Captain Jack, who now calls himself Captain Jack Andrews. Somehow sports bettors have the best nicknames. So how'd you get Spanks?
So Spanky was when I was a kid, you know, my mother loved to watch Little Rascals. And I was always kind of getting into a little bit of trouble. It just kind of stuck with me, where she just started calling me Spanky. And then it just stuck with me until I became a grown man. And, you know, usually in the offshore sports books, whenever, you know, you'd have an account number and password. So my password was always Spanky. And, they, you know, eventually guys would just start calling you by your password. So my account number would just say 116 Spanky. and you know, 4:30 Spanky. So whenever I'd call up all these places, my password was always Spanky, and then it just became my name with everybody in the offshore world, and then it just stuck.
So while we're talking about offshore, how often did you get stiffed by offshore books?
Yeah, you know, I've had my fair share with offshore books. It's one of those things in which you do your due diligence and you find out if the money's good, but like, you know, there's always that credit risk of not getting paid. And I've definitely been laid down on my highest stiff. I was one guy screwed me out of over $300,000. And then there's, you know, the numbers you just don't, you know, you don't forget. You know, 52,000 was another one, 25,000. And again, it's, you know, in hindsight, looking back over, you know, I've been doing this now for almost 20 years. It's not that bad. I've kind of dodged a few bullets and been bailed out a few times. But, my list is long, but I know there's a lot of other pros out there that have a much longer list. And, you know, I'm happy where I'm at.
You mentioned you bet college basketball. In another month or so, there's going to be March Madness. Is that an opportunity for you or something you avoid?
No, March Madness is kind of like a lot of March Madness. We get into non-conference play now. So it's kind of like you kind of get a little bit of an edge of November where there's, you know, there's different teams playing from different conferences. So it's a little bit harder for a bookmaker to make a line there. Although it's heavy action. So that first round, especially, first two rounds, that first Thursday through Sunday, there's opportunities there. So we definitely do that. But once that Sunday ends and the Sweet 16 is established, then, you know, it kind of dies down. Of course, there's other tournaments, not just the NCAA tournament, your NIT tournament, your CBI tournament. So a lot of different, you know, non-conference play, And there's definitely opportunity there.
So your point is that the major schools are well known and so handicapped fairly, but the minor schools, the books don't know them as well, and so there you might have done more research. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. But when the minor schools kind of play the minor schools, it's one thing. But when it's hard, you know, because, you know, usually, like if you look at a college basketball slate right now, the point spreads are more or less, everything's less than 20, you know, more or less. Once you get into the tournament, you're going to have point spreads higher than 20. A lot of them are double-digit point spreads. So when you see something like that, that's when it's hard, you know, there's edge there because, you know, it's hard to calibrate an established school with a non-established school and know how they match up together. So I think there's definitely opportunities there to exploit.
Okay. Have you ever entered handicapping contests?
No, in the offshore world, obviously none of those, I'd believe them to be true. So I would never enter that. I know there are several in Las Vegas. There was just a recent one from DraftKings. They wouldn't let me enter it because they kicked me out of that place. But my buddy entered it, Moneyline Mike, otherwise known as Chinese Mike, and he finished sixth in that, so that was good for him. And but I've never really, you know, I know there's the Hilton one, the Super Contest, and there's a couple of other ones. I haven't really dabbled in that. I'm kind of we're caught up in the day-to-day thing, and so a contest is just. You know, I guess it's something maybe we could explore in the future. I just never got around to it. I know there's proxy servers. I guess even if you don't live in Nevada, where you can actually have someone put in your selections every week or whatnot for the football contests. So, yeah, it's something. I just never got into it. But I think there's definitely – and I think they're going to be popping up more and more now with the regulation being getting nationwide. So I think there's opportunity there. I know that DraftKings one, there was a huge overlay. I don't know if we're going to be seeing that ever again, but yeah, you know, I think the opportunities are there, and it's a completely different strategy with these contests than your day-to-day sports betting. You know, a contest strategy, just like a tournament strategy, when you're entering a casino tournament game versus if you're playing the game regularly, completely different different things to do and different techniques to employ.
What did you mean when you said the offshore contests are not true?
So for example, like there was a contest, it was a sports book by the name of SBG Global a long time ago, and they used to have a March Madness contest. You know, I remember they'd give 100,000 out, but you know, every player would make their selections or whatever, and whoever had the most points in a bracket would win. But obviously, these things are, you know, they would never publish every other player's bracket. You wouldn't know really where you stood. And I guess, and you know, I never won one. But if you did win one, I you know, how would you know? If you lost, how would you know somebody else beat you? Nothing was public knowledge in the offshore world. You know, frankly speaking, I think that if they were going to give the 100,000 out, they'd probably give it to their biggest whale that lost millions already. And make him happy and say, "Hey, congratulations! You won the contest." And you know, it was there was no publishing of all these picks, and there was no full transparency of where everyone stood in the offshore world. It's just completely unregulated, so I wouldn't really trust these contests.
I see.
What percentage of your betting is against the opening lines?
Okay, so you know, there's a thing to be said. You know, the earlier you bet, usually if you're betting opening numbers, you're probably going to get the best number, but you're going to get the least amount down. The longer you wait, you're going to be betting into a worse number, but you're going to be getting more down. So there's a fine line here between trying to walk that tightrope and manage getting as much down and getting the best number possible. And we don't really like to, you know, bet overnights because, you know, betting overnights, you're not getting that much down. There's not many sports books that are going to hang up overnight lines. But that being said, you know, we will bet early in the morning. So where there's a lot of sports books would hang up their numbers, you know, historically 11 a.m. Eastern time when everybody would just, okay, that's when the floodgates would open, you know, BetCris or Bookmaker, they would increase their limits at 10:30 a.m. Eastern. And that's when, you know, a Grande would open up at 11 a.m. Eastern. So that's kind of when, you know, okay, it was all fair game. A lot of the offshore sites would take the circles off the games, and then you would be able to get full limits then. So most of the stuff we're doing is early morning. The overnights, not so much. Now, that's different in football. In football, most of the stuff, college football, is going to be early week. So, you know, we're betting stuff, you know, Sunday night might be a little bit aggressive, but maybe Monday, Tuesday, we're getting our positions in for Saturday. So you're not really betting the true opener, but you're trying to bet it as early as possible to get the most down.
All right. Now we'll shift it to the closing line. What percentage of the time do you think you beat the closing line?
Yeah, you know, we beat the closing line, you know, way more often than not. I wouldn't, you know, I'd probably say 4 out of 5 times we're going to beat the closing line, and out of those 4 out of 5, maybe 3 out of those 4, we're crushing the closing line. That's a very, you know, a lot of beating the closing line. If you assume that we're in an efficient market and the closing line is the true line, and that's a different thing. There's a little bit to be said about that. Especially in smaller markets. But if you assume that the closing line is a true market line, if you beat the true market line, then you're going to win long-term betting sports. So it's a good gauge, especially initially if someone's coming up in the business, and we still use it. Beating the closing line is an important factor for us, and it's a gauge on how much an edge you have and against the market line. So it's very important for us to beat that closing number.
Well, in football, with a minus 110, you can break even if you are beating the closing line 54 or 55% of the time, whatever the number is. Did you just say you're beating it 80% of the time?
No. Okay. So when you're saying you're beating in football, you're in order to break even laying 110, 52.38%, and you have to have winners. That's your win percentage to break even. We're beating the closing line 80% of the time, but that doesn't mean we have 80% winners. that, you know, that's, you know, it's impossible to hit that type of percentage. But beating the closing number, we try to have that, which is, that's positive EV. We like to have positive expected value going in to every game that we have, that we bet.
So beating the closing line means that if it was minus six, you had your money down at minus five, then you beat the closing line.
Exactly.
Aha. All right. Okay. Do you or do you know anybody who does beat the Pinnacle closing line?
Yeah, you know, the pinnacle number in terms of U.S. sports obviously is not what it was 10 years ago. Pinnacle is more of a European sports book now. And I think a lot of people, you know, give a lot of credit to Pinnacle, and they were definitely a pioneer in the business. But Pinnacle is focused now more so on the soccer markets, on these giant European markets. When it comes to the U.S. markets, they kind of accepted that they're not gonna, they're second tier to the places like a Chris, a Bet Chris, for example, who is probably the do all end all of U.S. sports when it comes to the best number out there. So beating the Chris or Pinnacle closing number, yeah, we definitely do that. That's the closing number. If you beat another sportsbook's closing number, it's not an important. When I say I'm beating the closing number, I mean I am beating the crisp closing number, or the Pinnacle closing number, for that matter.
Uh huh.
It used to be that many other books would just take whatever Pinnacle's number was and use that. Has that shifted now to Chris? Do they use Chris's number instead of Pinnacle's for the U.S. markets?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's so funny because, you know, we have so many offshore sports books, and till this day, there are so many sports books that are still copying Pinnacle's numbers. And it's unbelievable. Pinnacle's taking $250 on some of the stuff. And they're copying, you know, the days are gone where Pinnacle's taking five dimes on a college basketball total. This is not 2004, 2005, 2006. You know, and these guys are back end systems. They kind of had something where they were copying Pinnacle's number back then, and they're still doing so. And you know, Pinnacle, they'll admit, you know, when you're, it's just obvious. If I'm taking $250 on a game, I'm not really confident in that. Where they're probably not going to be able to beat that market. It's just a concession for their players. They're not really that's not their main focus here. Whereas an EPL game, English Premier League or something, where they're taking $50,000, $100,000, this is what their main thing is. So yeah, you know, there's offshore sports books that are still copying Pinnacle's line, and there's huge edge for us there. But most of them do copy. It's Chris or Pinnacle. Those are the two that most people copies. There's still people that copy the Greek sports book. Some people copy Grande. So those were always, you know, the big four, I guess, and for the last decade of where people were copying their numbers from.
Betting exchanges, common in England. Do you think the United States will ever get a proper betting exchange that runs similar to a futures market?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's something that'll be great for everyone. I think, you know, there's some regular, you know, all the gambling now that's happening in the United States is all intrastate, so there's no really interstate gambling. So I think that has to be that wall needs to be torn down, and once there's interstate gambling, and then there's like maybe a national exchange, that'll definitely help out, because I think a statewide exchange, like if you have an exchange within each state, I think having the necessary liquidity is going to be hard. You know, there have been exchanges, Matchbook, BetMaker, you know, in the offshore world, BetMaker didn't do well. Matchbook, I guess, holds their own, but it's just to have liquidity for all these sports. You know, you need somebody to seed that exchange, and seeding an exchange is a full time job, and you know, you kind of want to have some type of an offer price on every single line out there, and without somebody seeding that, it's gonna be difficult. You know, people think, you know, you have to have the necessary liquidity to make an exchange work, and you have to have a certain number of seeders, guys that are offering prices, putting prices in. And then when you do that, you're susceptible to getting picked off. You know, it's a 120-hour week job. You know, there's no rest. It's not something I would like to do. No matter, you know, if somebody even paid me to do that, I just wouldn't want to put the time in to seed an exchange. I would rather just, you know, have my sniper ready and right when that number was, you know, if the number was off, you know, just pick it off. So, if it does pass, I think liquidity will be the major obstacle, ahead.
Okay. One of our listeners wrote in wanting to know if there's one sport that's easier to win than the others.
Yeah, you know, I think that there is an inverse correlation between bet limit and beatability, I guess, I should say, or vulnerability. So, you know, the lower the limits, usually, is the easier. Only to offer $200 on something, that's probably they're more susceptible to losing and to, you know, getting numbers, they're not that confident. So the proposition market, the off the wall market, the different baseball that they're having in Central America and in the Caribbean, different you know division. Three college basketball games, division, you know, the different extra games that are, you know, there's even sports books offshore that are, believe it or not, that offer lines on high school, football games, wow. Major high school football. So these are the type of things that, you know, the limits are going to be low, but these markets are definitely beatable. So I would, you know, if I was coming up in a business and I'm going to say, hey, what am I going to concentrate on? You know, I would definitely not do the NFL. The NFL is an efficient market and, the number is pretty strong there. And if you get down a ton on the NFL. However, you know, if you focus in on maybe one conference or on one, you know, different proposition wager in a certain sport, I think if you just solely focus in on that, I think the amateur, the beginner could find some edge there and exploit that.
Now you've talked about your teammates. What kind of division of duties are on the team? Do you have a particular specialty? Are you the jack of all trades or what? What can you tell us?
Yeah, the jack of all trades, the master of none, as they say, right? So I built my business and I'm able to essentially do everything on my team. You know, so my team, you know, you have your traders, the guys that are betting. That are just betting and getting positions and, you know, kind of like day trading, essentially, just day trading the sports markets. I have my quants that are making numbers for us, that are working in the back end, that provide us with a set of numbers that my traders will use and to determine if we want to get on or off a position. Chinese Mike, he does the accounting work. So, you know, there's handling all the accounting that has to do with it and handling betting partners. You know, my business is based on betting partners. The days are gone where I can, you know, well, the post-up days are gone. So I can't go in and try to sign up with a sports book or I can't, you know, say, hey, I'm Spanky. Can I have a sports book account? I can't do that because nobody's going to want to book my action. Very few guys are going to book my action. So I rely on betting partners to be able to get me accounts. And then we would be able, and they would pose as the player. Of course, I would be the ones pulling the strings in the back end, putting all my bets in, and then we would be able to share the profits that way. So I'm able to meet all these betting partners and to try to recruit new betting partners to try to get accounts for me to play into. So that's a big part of the business. And of course, another part is the technology. So I myself, you know, I have a computer science background. I'm the one who built a lot of my auto better or my software to alert me of different opportunities or to be able to look at different line sets worldwide. So the technology, you know, the programming has to happen. So I have one guy and myself right now that we're doing a lot of that stuff where we're maintaining the source code, maintaining the program. There's always tweaks that have to be made. So it's, you know, and then I, of course, I have my secretaries that are, you know, just, you know, handling betting partners, any concerns or questions, or helping out with, you know, the accounting and just managing the office. So it's a pretty, you know, I don't want, you know, the we're 8 employees or whatever it is, but we're not, you know, it's a small company, but there's a lot of things. A lot of people are doing multiple things. So, you know, I mentioned Mike, he does the accounting work, but he's also trading. My programmer, he's a trader, but he's a programmer. My quant, they don't do the trade. They just make the numbers. My days of trading are kind of not there anymore. I'm not really day-to-day trading anymore. I'm more the front end, you know, maintaining and trying to get new betting partners, doing a little bit of a lot of the back end, maintaining source code, you know, and then just like in any business, you know, you have to go out, you have to have dinners, and you have to meet new people. And, so, you know, I'm stuck with that responsibility, which of course is, I'm not nothing to complain about, you know, going out and having dinners all the time. But yeah, it's a pretty big operation. Even though it's a small company, there's a lot of moving parts to do.
Do you have, I mean, have you had, you know, guys working for you who, after some period of time, go, oh, I could do this, and try to strike off on their own? And do you have them sign non-competes, or is that an issue?
Yeah, so we have everybody sign non-competes. But then again, you know what I mean, how far is that going to go? I take care of all my guys, and my guys are well taken care of, and they you know, not that I know of, nobody's ever left me and gone to another group. And again, there's not many groups like us. You know what I mean? You can't look in a phone book or look in on a website and look for, hey, sports traders wanted, or you know, professional betting office, come and apply. You know, this doesn't exist really. You know, maybe it might show up a little bit more often now, but these things, we're a very unique company. There's not many of us, and you know, and the few that are out there, I know of all of them. So, you know, I know of them, and I work with them. You know what I mean? We're not, even though we're competitors, we kind of, you know, I'll work together with other betting groups out there, sharing information, helping each other out. You know what I mean? There's, we're not, you know, just because we're competitors doesn't mean we can't help each other out. It's a small industry. It's an unregulated business, especially with the offshore world. So you kind of want to be able to, you have to, keep each other in check, help everybody out. And I take care of my guys. So, you know, nobody's ever left me, or at least that I know of, that has gone to a competing group, because that competing group, I have such good relationships with them that they would tell me, hey, listen, this guy, you know, is trying to reach out and trying to come to me to try to, you know, and then once I found that out, you know what I mean, he'd be blackballed. He wouldn't be able to, you know, get into it. It's an industry that you just can't walk into. Your reputation in this business is everything.
So, Tommy Hyland, blackjack player, talked about getting people for his team. And for him, it was a lot more about relationship than it was about whether or not you knew blackjack coming in. When you're looking for a partner in your business, how much is about relationship, and how much is them knowing about sports betting?
When you say a partner, are you talking about a betting partner or someone that's going to be working in my office trading?
Somebody's going to be getting the money down with you as behind him. I thought that's what you called a partner.
Yeah, a betting partner. So a betting partner doesn't, you know, they just give me accounts. I'm the one who's doing the betting. Of course, if I win, they're going to have to pay me my winnings. If I lose, I, you know, we have like 50-50 splits or whatever it is, 60, whatever it is. So yeah, so a betting partner is, they don't have to know anything about sports. Betting partners just give me accounts. Now I have to trust that betting partner will pay me. Again, we're in an unregulated market here. So the betting partner has to pay me my winnings if I win. If he doesn't, then there's nothing I could do really. I'm not gonna. So it's one of those things in which it's a trust. So relationships are everything in this business. Just like if you have a blackjack team and a guy wins money, you have to trust that he's going to report what he won to share with the team. Betting partners, you have to trust that they're going to pay you your share of the winnings. And everything is relationship. Everything, and a lot of the things now, most of the betting partners that I do business with usually are coming from some type of a reference or referral, or somebody that I know that knows them. you know, it's such a rare thing now where somebody just comes off the street. Hey, I heard about you. You know, guys will reach out to me on Twitter. I heard about you. I'd like to be your betting partner. You know, that's that. People do that, but you know, I can't. I'm not gonna, you know, do something unless I know my money is guaranteed. I have to make sure that I'm gonna get paid when I win. And that's the most important thing. I could win at any percentage rate. I could be the best sports bettor in the world. But what the hell's the difference if I'm not getting paid when I win?
Yes.
It's the most important thing.
Now, the last time you were on, you shared a story about Billy Walters where he was manipulating the market, so to speak, at the Mirage. And with your tools, you were able to spot it and beat him at it. And somebody came up and told you that Billy didn't appreciate that. And so you cut it out. Did you, I mean, Vegas is formerly a mob town. Was this a, were you fearful for your life? Or is this out of respect for somebody, a really good bettor, or part of a relationship? Or when he said, we appreciate it if you wouldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I wasn't fearful for my life. No, not at all. I you know, this is, I respect Billy and what he's done for the business. So if, you know, and if it's his play, and I didn't know it was his play, and when he, you know, you have to just ask me once. Listen, you know, in this business, you got to be a gentleman. And if somebody comes to me and says, listen, I'd appreciate you don't do this. I'm a gentleman, of course. I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not, you know, of course, I'm. As I was coming up, if I'm a young and aggressive guy, you know, hell with you. I'll, you know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out whose dick is bigger. No, I'm not doing that. It's you got to be a gentleman more than anything. And if somebody asks you something, you respect their wishes and you move on. There's plenty of money to be made. There's plenty of opportunities out there. So being a gentleman, it trumps everything. You know, it's not always about the bottom line. It's not always about maximizing your pockets here. It's about maintaining your reputation and doing the right thing. Because I'm sure if I was in that situation, if I made the call to somebody else, I would expect, given that I've been in this business now for so long, and if somebody was a new and up and coming guy or somebody, I would expect that he would do the same thing to me, and respect me. So you just have to kind of respect your elders, respect the people that have come before you that have paved the way in this business. For you to be able to do what you do.
All right. We're talking to Spanky. We're going to take a brief commercial break. We'll be right back. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In February, the monthly promotion is the $600,000 Crazy Cupid's Money Madness, where simultaneously there will be two casino-wide progressives going. The bigger one must hit between $10,000 and $25,000, and anyone playing when it goes off without being the actual winner gets $25 in free play. The smaller one must hit between $1,000 and $2,500 and will hit approximately three times a day. Any machine, any time, so long as your player's card is inserted and you have played at least $1 in the previous 60 seconds. The free video poker class next Tuesday, February 12th, will be Double Bonus Ultimate X. Ultimate X requires 10 coins per line and returns 5 coins per line times the multiplier, which ranges from no multiplier at all, which is actually a 1X multiplier, up to 12X. The quarter triple play game at the South Point requires $7.50 per play, and returns a little more than 99.7%, meaning that with the 0.3 slot club, it's an even money bet 24/7, plus whatever promotion's going on. The game is high volatility and a lot of fun. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Super Triple Play Jackpots. It's a game for those who wish to gamble. It requires 7 coins per line, The first coin bumps up all the values for all the four of a kinds. The second coin provides you with a wheel spin whenever you end up with a four of a kind. Since these quads only come around about once every 420 hands or so, it's a heaven or hell experience. If you don't get many quads today, you will not like this game. If you do, you will. It is easy to set up your computer software to play this game once you get an average value for the wheel spins. You just enter that into the quads, and you can figure out the exact strategy. We are talking with Spanky. How much of your day are you involved in the day-to-day analysis of the games?
I'm not really involved that much with the day-to-day trading and analysis. We're at a level now, or I'm at the level where I kind of surround myself with people that are smarter than me, and have those guys kind of help steer the ship, so to speak. So I'm not really involved in the day-to-day parts of my business. I'm more, like I said before, I'm more the frontline guy where I'm just trying to get new accounts. You know, without places to play into, we can't operate. We need places to play into. So, and we're getting kicked out all the time. We're losing accounts left and right. It's just the nature of the business. But we still have to stay ahead of the curve, and we have to keep obtaining accounts and places to get down for us to stay alive. So that's my main goal in 2019 and beyond. This is what I'm mainly focusing on.
You know, I wanted to bring up something about when you were talking about having respect for somebody else in the game with the Billy Walters incident. One of the things that's really frustrating for blackjack players is when you discover something that is a really good edge and sort of less experienced players let's call them less experienced players also discover it and they go about exploiting it in a really stupid way that's going to make it obvious to the casino that there's something up, and the thing gets burned out right away. And then the question is, what do you do about it? Do you go try to have a talk with the guy and explain to him that his approach is bad and he's going to burn it out? Or, you know, and I'm wondering, do you have this problem with sports betting and how do you handle it?
Yeah, this is the perfect example, Richard, you know, where pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. A lot of guys out there, you have to be able to finesse a market. So if guys that have the edge, this is one of those things in which if you're betting overnight games, and if you're betting games that are overnight, so you're getting the best line, but essentially you ruin the market for a lot of people. So like if I know somebody's betting an overnight, and if I'm matching with the overnight moves, you know, I would love to just find a way to get this guy and say, listen, whatever your overnight thing is, just partner up with me. I'll make sure whatever you were betting, your $1,000-$2,000 overnight line, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? We'll take care of that. Just stop ruining the market that early. So you want to have your hand on the pulse and control everything, but you just can't. Guys are going to just always do what they're going to do for them. And without being aware of the opportunities out there, hey, you know what? It's probably not. And if you maybe researched and looked around, then it's hard for other bettors to communicate with other bettors. A lot of guys are just, you know, smart guys that have a limited bankroll that just want to be able to exploit whatever they have and not worry about the industry as a whole. And there's no really communication. Like, you know, we can't really reach out to each other. So it's hard. I wish there was some type of a communication, or a way to communicate with each other. But yeah, I 100% agree. It's very frustrating when something like this happens. And it's gotten worse and worse. Like, you know, now a lot of, the markets are just moving earlier and earlier. It used to be 11 a.m. Eastern. Then a few years ago, it got to 10 a.m. Eastern. Now we're talking 9 a.m., 8 a.m. Eastern. It's like, it's getting earlier and earlier. So, you know, the early bird catches the worm. So, you know, but it's getting a little bit more difficult to get down that early. So you got to walk that fine line and try to be able to get as much down with also not sacrificing taking such a worse number.
Are there any guys on your team, quants, making up bets on games that you really know nothing about? One of our listeners made up the example of Eastern Canadian AAA curling, which may or may not exist. So if your guy says, I think we can make money there and these should be the lines, are you going to go with it? Or it's like you go, I've never heard of curling. Well, I've heard of it, but I really don't know anything about it. So we're going to stay away from it.
No, we're sports traders. So whatever inefficiencies we can find in the sports markets, I don't care what sport it is. If there's an edge, we're going to bet it. The only thing is that, you know, a lot of guys focus just on that. And if you're just going to be betting Eastern Canadian AAA curling, your account is probably not going to be lasting too long. So, it's okay. And that's another thing. A lot of these guys are prop bettors. And they're very good at what they do. But if you only bet props in an account, at least in the offshore world, your account will not last long. Guys are going to say, what is this? You know what I mean? NFL Sunday comes around, you're not putting in an NFL bet. You only bet props and exotic wagers. You know, there's something to be said about account longevity and to try to, instead of going right for the jugular, to try to slowly extract money just to milk a game. Just like Richard was saying earlier, you want to be able to milk something, not just kill the game. Just kill it. Well, I would rather make $1,000 a week off a given an account for an entire year than make $5,000 the first week and then get cut off. It's an art form in essence there. And guys, a lot of the guys that are new and coming up, they just go and attack and just try to kill. And then when they have no accounts left or when their edge is discovered and there's nothing they could, you know what I mean? What now? It's important to be able to try to, longevity is everything. And I would rather have longevity than try to make a giant score in one shot.
So one of our listeners asked about how much autonomy do you guys have? I don't really even understand what the question is. Do you understand it? And if so, how much?
Well, autonomy is given my guys kind of reins. You know, most of my guys have been working for me for so long. If somebody new came on, I kind of, you know, keep the leash a little bit tighter. But my guys, you know, listen, we have a standard of excellence, and I kind of instill that standard of excellence in my office where, you know, there's going to be people smarter than us in this business. There's going to be guys that are going to know more. There are going to be guys with better handicappers. There are going to be guys that might have better software, but that's a long shot. But nobody's going to be working harder than us. And that's something I've always taken my pride in, because that's something I can control. I can't control my intelligence. I could try to learn as much as possible, but just people are just more naturally intelligent than you. There's people that are just better programmers. There's people that are just smarter and more efficient in what they do. But the one thing that I can control, and I've instilled this into my entire team, is to be able to never be outworked. Always, you know, work harder than anybody. It might take you longer to get to, you know, from point A to point B. But if you put in that effort and if you work harder than the other guy, you're going to get there. And we're going to even go above and beyond. So I think my guys know that, you know, you work hard. You know, we don't really... You know, most of my traders, they're working 6 days a week, sometimes 6.5 days a week during a busy season. It's a tough gig. You know, some guy, you know, I was used to never have a day off, you know, from September through March. It's, you know, but then come April when the slow season starts, our slow season's baseball season. You know, I'm on a skeleton staff. My guys enjoy themselves and they get to relax, but they know, you know, once football starts and basketball, we're in it and we're in it pretty deep. And, you know, the 80 hour weeks, and it takes its toll on you, but you know what? I know that, you know, most groups are not putting in that effort. They're not working that hard. And that's, you know, I attribute a lot of my success to hard work. Hard work is, is there's no substitution for experience. There's no substitution for hard work. It just, if we're going to outwork everybody, we're going to excel.
It's interesting that you say that because, you know, I've heard that the sports books make the least amount of money on baseball and that baseball is one of the easier things to beat. But it sounds like you don't really focus anywhere near as much time on that.
Yeah, no, listen, we're still betting baseball, but it's all about the board, okay? So a baseball board, you know, we're still betting baseball, and we could beat baseball. The only thing is that baseball, there's you know, at most 15 games on a board, okay? You know, versus the college season. So college football, on a college football Saturday, there's 60 games. On a college basketball Saturday, there's 105 games or 100-plus games. So the sheer amount of games and the sheer amount of volume requires more traders, more activity, there's more people doing more things, more moving parts. Whereas baseball, it's a certain set every single day. You know, there's travel days, Mondays and Thursdays usually are a lighter schedule. And then, you know, your other days, you're going to have your 12 games, 13 games. It's just not that many games. So it's a lot easier to manage for a smaller team than a full schedule.
Right, I get it.
Last time you were on, you talked about making visits to Costa Rica, getting to know the bookmakers, making relationships with them. One of our listeners writes in, wants to know more about that. What are the offices really like? What were these guys really like? Can you share some of that?
Yeah, so the first time I went down to Costa Rica, I think it was back in 2000, 2001, something like that. I didn't know what to expect. I honestly, again, I'm completely naive. I thought this was going to be a little hut, you know, with a straw roof and you know, like a Gilligan's Island place. I had no idea that, you know, this is the technology there and the infrastructure. It's so sophisticated. You know, satellites, there's satellites on top of all these big buildings, all these different satellites to be able to get the feeds in of all the games. And the offices are so well designed. It's right up there with any New York City Park Avenue office. But, you know, it's very, very nice. It's, you know, beautiful infrastructure. And so that was the first thing. Like, I couldn't believe how this is, you know, a legitimate business. I didn't realize, you know, an offshore bookmaker, how is this? This is, you know, this has got to be working out of a hut or something. In the Caribbean, you know, everyone's on the islands. They're thinking, oh yeah, they're down on the islands, but it's not like that at all. And the people, you know, because most of the things are in Costa Rica. The business, a lot of it's based in Costa Rica. A lot of the offshore sports books, and the people, the Costa Ricans are very nice people. They're very friendly people, good people, and all the bookmakers down there, they're just good people. You know what I mean? And again, a lot of these, you know, offshore sports books are technically they're breaking U.S. law by catering by booking U.S. customers, but you know, from what I've seen, again, you know what I mean, just because they're labeled a criminal doesn't really make them a bad person. Morally, I think they're doing nothing wrong, and these guys are some of the best people I've ever met. They've they're completely 100% honorable. The everything that they do is they always pay their customers. Again, the best of the best I'm talking about. Guys do the right thing. So, and they go out of their way to do the right thing. Like, you know, the major players down there are just such good guys. And, I wouldn't trade my friendships with these guys for anything. You know, of course you have your, you know, bad apples, of course. There are scammers down there and there are bad. And I try to avoid those guys. You know what I mean? I try to steer clear from them. But all the sports books, a lot of the major operators, they all know each other down there. Just because they're competitors doesn't mean we all, you know, they can't be friends. So everyone's friendly out there and then everything's based on referrals. That's how kind of my reputation kind of went. You know, I knew this guy, befriended this guy. He kind of, you know, said this, I know Spanky's good, you should give him a shot. And that's how my credit increased. That's how my reputation increased. And that's how I got to where I'm at now by befriending a lot of these guys. Just because they're my bookmaker, doesn't mean that we have to have an adversarial relationship where, you know, even though I'm trying to take their money, they're trying to take mine, you don't look at it that way. You look at it as they're trying to manage their books accordingly and make their business profitable. And I'm trying to do the same in essence, and I'm trying to, you know, bet the right way and make money at the end of the year. But just because I'm laying 110 and they're taking 110 doesn't mean we have to hate each other. We can still have a very happy relationship and have a gentleman relationship where even though I'm trying to beat you, you're trying to beat me, that's okay. We're still very friendly at the end of the day. We're going to go out, we're going to have dinner, we're going to have drinks, and we're going to respect each other on each side of the counter. I'm going to respect their, what they do, and I just hope to earn the respect from them from what I do.
During the last year, the guy from Five Dimes got kidnapped and murdered. Was that somebody you knew? And
yeah, that's a crazy story. I'm in shock and awe on that. I knew him. And you know, a lot of, you know, he was a very honorable guy. He was the kind of, you know, they call him Tony from Five Dimes. He was, he stopped booking me back in probably 2003 directly. But, you know, I've had several beards going to him, sign up with accounts, and we've beat him out of a lot of money, and he's paid every single time. So, you know, he's a little bit of an arrogant guy, cocky guy, but you know what? You know, he's a smart guy. You know what I mean? So a lot of the time, you know, the smartest guys sometimes are a little bit cocky. So I felt bad hearing the story. You know what I mean? You don't want to hear that to your worst enemy, somebody getting kidnapped, getting taken away from their wife and everything. It sucks to hear something like that. You know, I haven't heard much. I haven't been down to Costa Rica since that happened. So I don't really know many details, or nobody's really told me anything, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, nobody's really heard anything. I know they made some arrests in Europe, I think in Spain or something, and then I heard they made some arrests in Costa Rica. You know, they don't know if he's still alive or not. They never found the body. I would hope he's still alive.
Oh, I thought they did. No,
they found the body, but it wasn't him. It was somebody else. So they haven't found the body yet. And and there's a lot of conspiracy theories where, you know, they say maybe he staged everything. I can't comment on any of that. I have no idea. What I do know, though, is listen, the guy, even though, you know, he always paid. And that's one thing. You kind of like in the offshore sports books, you kind of, the most important thing is if they pay you when you win. You know, whereas regulated United States sports books, you're always going to get paid, right? They're regulated, so they have to pay you. So the U.S. sports book should be held to a little bit of a higher standard with an offshore sports book. Offshore book, if you pay me, you know what? That's the best thing in the world. Everything else is just gravy. So, and he always paid. I really don't have anything bad to say about the guy.
All right. We have about 4 minutes left. One of our listeners has a question. It could go longer, but please don't make it. It's, how do you make money betting sports without divulging too much? What is the secret recipe? How much is art? How much is science?
You know, so the two ways, you know, to bet sports, at least professionally, or to bet sports as a living, you have to be able to know what to bet and how to bet. I think what to bet is, you know, what picking winners, and then how to bet is how to get down, how to make sure that you get down enough money to make it viable. So that those are the challenges. Just to take those two prongs down and kind of like go down the tree, what to bet, you can figure out what to bet essentially by either handicapping yourself and making your own numbers, or by kind of playing the market, just looking at numbers, having a Don Best screen and looking at numbers and trying to analyze how numbers are moving. So, you know, if you look at the equities market, it's like a fundamental analysis where you can look at a balance, you look at all the financial statements, perform a fundamental analysis on the stock, and then kind of be able to find out if you want to invest in that. Same thing if you look at the stats of a player or a stats of a team and run some analysis, you can be able to, you know, you could make your own number and find out if there's value given the market line. Or what you can do is you kind of just look at how prices move, kind of like a technical analysis where you're looking at how different lines are moving and to try to go in and out and then try to be able to just play the market. So there's several different ways to go about it. We kind of do a little bit of both. We're looking at lines. We're looking at markets. I know, you know, it's a big information thing. And I have guys making numbers. So I have my own set of numbers, but I'm also looking at how numbers are fluctuating and taking positions on that. The second part of that is how to get down. So, you know, once you get good enough, you're going to get kicked out. So you want to be able to bet. And that's a thing that, you know, we have. You know, I've had an auto bettor since 2003. There's a couple of up-and-coming groups out there that are, you know, so have auto bettors where you're able at the click of a button to be able to bet the same line in several hundreds of accounts at the same time. So we've had that for a long time, and that's something that's very important. Technology is such an important thing in this business, to because the limits have gone down. So you wanna be able to get hit as many places as possible, because the number of line sets now are so consolidated. So you can't, if you try to manually bet, if you bet this one place and lay five, by the time you get to the third or fourth place and you're trying to lay that same five, they're going to already be at a six. So you have to be able to hit them all at one time within a matter of seconds. And that's what software would do. So that's an important part of it for what we do. Did that answer the question more or less?
I think you've answered questions very, very well. You have a Twitter account of @Spanky. If anybody else wanted to get in touch with you, is Twitter the best way, or is there another way to get in touch with you?
No, Twitter's good. You know, I answer all the DMs as much as I can. You know what I mean? I kind of get over flooded with the direct messages on Twitter. But yeah, I'll answer anybody, and then I try to help as many people as I can. At the same time, you know what I mean? It could be a full-time job to be on Twitter, so I can't, you know, if I don't get to anybody's questions or anybody's concerns, or what, you know, just bear with me. I'll eventually get to it.
Recently on @Spanky, you posted videos of the line being cut drastically at Harris several times in one day. Is that pretty much the way it goes when a sports book doesn't want your action anymore?
Yeah, you know, I've had videos. I've been kicked out now. I've been kicked out from William Hill. I've been kicked out from Harris, which is all the Caesars properties. I've been kicked out from the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City. I've been kicked out from DraftKings in Atlantic City at the resorts. So, yeah, you know, a lot of these guys, a lot of the European sports books are coming over and running these companies. And Harris is not European, but, you know, but more or less a lot of these European sports books are coming over, and they don't understand how to book sharp action, and they take the easy way out. You know, William Hill is a perfect example. They just kick players out. They kick sharp players out. And, you know, it sucks. You know what I mean? You want to be able to, you know, the Pinnacle or the Chris, where they accept all sharp players. You wish that these new sports books that are coming into the United States are able to run that kind of model, that are able to accept all players and not be and not ostracized just because somebody's sharp or somebody's beating the closing number or somebody's winning. So that's how it is, and Harris was an extreme example, you know, where I have videos of the progression where I was promised, you know, the limits. I was a Diamond Star member there, so I was promised double limits, house limits on everything. I was getting, I think, 10 or 20,000 on an NBA side. Of course, 7 hours later, they cut me down from 20,000 on an NBA side to $500 on an NBA side, and then just a few days after that, they 86'd me. So, you know, it's standard practice. This happens all the time in the offshore world, and in the U.S. betting markets. You know, I never really did a lot of the U.S. stuff personally because it just came to Jersey, but I'm experiencing it the same thing as well. It's guys are. I always make the joke, you know, where these guys aren't bookmakers, they're dressmakers. So, you know, I'm hoping for more bookmakers to come into the market and to be able to take on all action.
Very good. Thank you, Spanky. It's been a pleasure having you on our show. Thank you, Richard. Go out and enjoy your secret game. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.